Welcome back to the very eerie, extremely wicked, and quite spooky podcast with Raven and Ree.
I'm Raven.
And I'm Ree. And today is a very special episode, everyone, because we are premiering our season of unsolved disappearances. Well, some of them maybe have solved, but mostly unsolved. So what better way to kick off the season of the mysterious case of Malaysian Flight 370, which was a plane traveling from Malaysia to Beijing, China, then all of a sudden, it was gone. So what happened? Well, we're going to look at the secrets. We're going to dive into it. So Raven, take it away.
Well, okay, so this happened. It disappeared in 2014. So I was 14?
It was, what, March 2014? Yeah, I had just turned... I was 14.
Oh, I was 15. Yeah, I was 15, about to turn 16. And I remember, I think when I heard about this, I'm pretty sure I was at my dad's house, because my dad's house was the only house I had cable at. So, like, if I was watching TV, like, I would watch it. And my dad's real into, like, crime and stuff like that, or like just mysteries. So he told me about it, and we would just like watch like the news, because I mean they were trying to find it for so long. And then this was also one of those cases where like you are like on YouTube in the middle of the night, and then you find like a random video about it, and then you go down like a rabbit hole of just like what happened. Like, this is one of those that I was always, like... And I was always so, like, infatuated with this case, because it was, like, how does a plane full of 230-something passengers and, like, crew members and two pilots, like, how does it just go missing?
Yeah. I am the same. I remember hearing about this, and I was just, like, there's no way. I was, like... After they announced it, because I think it took, like, a little bit for them to announce what happened, or at least for it to get, like, worldwide. Yeah. I remember thinking, okay, there's no way a plane went missing. They're going to find the wreckage. They're going to find out what happened to it. And the fact that it's been 7 years and there's still no clear answer is just, it's sad, because just think of all, like, the families.
Yeah, especially that was, like, a huge thing, too, because... Like, everything that's came out as of now, there's been more facts and stuff that have came out, but, like, what happened is still, like, a mystery. Like, where are the bodies? Where's the luggage? Where's the plane fraction?
Yeah.
Like, and then I remember, like, a couple years after it happened, someone had, like, spotted in the ocean, like a piece of metal that they thought could be the plane. But I don't think it had turned out to be a part of the plane. Like, they had, like, went and got it. But that was, like, a huge speculation. They were like, oh, my God, we found it. And it was, like, not what they thought. But I do, I mean, we can jump right into it. Because this is, like, literally, like, so let's look at the timeline. So what I do know about this, so there were 239 people aboard. That included 10... flight crew members, which I feel like is a lot. 10 flight crew members is a lot. Where did you find that? I was looking for my charger forever. Oh, of course the cat spit it, but they didn't ruin it. Okay. So 10 crew flight members, which is a lot. So this is a big plane. Like, these kind of planes are big. They're not like your typical American Airlines plane.
Yeah, it was, let's see, it was a Boeing 777-200ER. That is a big plane.
That is huge. And I know that there was two pilots. I've seen their names, I just don't know how to pronounce it, so I don't want to say it and, like, butcher it. But there's two pilots. One of them was actually, this was his last test flight to become an official pilot, to be able to... be a lead pilot. Like, this, he was being mentored and trained, and so the other pilot was his mentor or trainee, and was kind of like advising him, but he was still the head pilot for this route. And I mean, and everything seemed normal, like everything was normal up until that last message they got. So I know that there was, so let's see, they took off at 1:07 a.m.
Yeah, it was a red eye flight. It was just after midnight that this plane took off.
Yeah, and so they said that everything was normal. They were having, you know, their usual communication that you have to do when you take off in a plane. Everything was normal, and I do know. So of the, among the passengers of this, of the passengers, there 227 passengers. There was 5 children in those 227. And then the most of them were Chinese, and the rest, and of the rest, 38 were Malaysian. And then we had a couple people from Indonesia, Australia, India, France, US, Iran, Ukraine, Canada, New Zealand, Netherlands, Russia, and Taiwan. So, I mean, there was probably like one of each or something, but there was like quite a bit of people on this, like from all over the place on this plane. Yeah.
And that's why so many countries got involved for searching, because it's all like, we have one of our, like, citizens. Yeah. We need to find out what happened.
Yeah, exactly. And so, I do know, so right before, I mean, like, 1:07 was the time where they were like, okay, like, we had communication. But I know up until, like, 1:01, at 1:01 a.m., they had radioed that they had leveled off at 35,000 feet, which was their, like, their usual, like, that's what we're staying at, you know? Can you plug that in, please? That was their usual, you know, like, we're staying at 35,000 feet, you know?
Yeah.
And it was fine. Like, no one was... It was literally, like, just normal. Like, a normal, like, flight. Then they said 11 minutes later, the airplane closed in at a kind of near Vietnam air... jurisdiction, air traffic jurisdiction. And then the trainee was kind of radioed in, said Malaysian 370. They contacted the people there and said a good night. So they said Malaysian, like, because they were saying goodbye, because they were like entering into the Vietnam air traffic, so they wouldn't be in contact with the people that they were like originally took off from, and they said goodnight. And they said goodnight, Malaysian 370. And apparently, the one weird thing about this was that usually they like read a frequency back, like they have like a little script, and they usually read it by like how it's supposed to be read, right?
Yeah.
But he didn't read it back that same way. Like, he kind of did it differently, but they were like, it didn't sound unusual. Like, it wasn't like, it didn't sound like anything was wrong. It was just kind of like more casual. So they didn't think anything of it. And then that was the last transmission before... And they were gone. And then they were gone.
And then they were gone.
Like, yeah. And so... go for it.
Oh, I was just saying, because like... Because if like you look at the map, which... it's like you see how their direct course, and then it's all like they head toward Vietnam, like you said, they lose contact with the Malaysian air traffic control, but then they take this turn, and it's all like, why did they take this turn? Because they it was reported that the engine, that the plane had just been fueled to like be able to do the 5-hour journey. So if it went over the 5-hour journey, then it was probably gonna run out of fuel. So it's like, why did they all of a sudden 1 hour after takeoff make this turn, and then they make another turn, and it's like, what's happening? So that's like the question.
It kind of sounds like, in that theory, it's not, kind of sounds like buying time.
Yeah.
Wasting time.
Yeah.
You know? So I do know that, okay, 5 seconds after it crossed into the Vietnam airspace, the symbol that represented the transponder dropped off the screens of the Malaysian air traffic control, which makes sense. That's usually what happens, you know? Mm-hmm. But then, 37 seconds later, the entire airplane disappeared from the secondary radar. Like, just completely. Like, so the first one was more normal, but that second one, they were like, that's weird. Because usually, when you, I'm not an air traffic controller, but, like, they know, even if something's, like, super far away, like, they can see it on their radar.
Yeah. And also, they have, like, is it called a black box that's in the plane that's supposed to, like, keep track and everything?
Yes. Yeah. They do.
So that they can, like, go in and see, like, what's happening. But, also, didn't something, I forget what it was, I just saw it on the documentary, that something was manually switched off, which is what, like, their radar thing, I think it was.
Yeah, so what got switched off was, like, the main phone line, and then, mm-hmm. like, the entertainment for the guests, like they could, like, watch TV, like, on the thing, that was switched off. I know I have an article here somewhere that says what exactly got turned off. I think it's this one. So then, at the time that it completely disappeared off of their second radar, it was 39 minutes after takeoff. But they just assumed, like, okay, well, they're dealing with other traffic elsewhere. And he didn't really notice that they disappeared from the second radar, because he just assumed that they were in the hands of, like, somewhere that was out of his range, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So then the Vietnam controller saw that the plane crossed into their airspace, and then it disappeared from their radar. Which means that had to have been shut off.
Yeah,
so they crossed... Yeah.
Yeah, it had to have been manually shut off. So that raises another question. It's all like, who from the inside shut it off and why?
Yeah.
And then we got to think also at this time, family members are gathering at the airport in Beijing waiting. And they didn't say anything for a while. They just had it as, like, delayed. Mm-hmm. And then it's all like, and so it's wondering, like, why, like, are they investigating why it's delayed? Like, because it took so long for them to realize the plane had even went missing, so.
Yeah, and so what had happened is that they did also try to contact the aircraft, like, several times. And no one picked up. Because I think that their main, like, I'm pretty sure that I had read that their main phone took, like, or with our main way of contacting, that was shut off as well. By the time they had picked up the phone to inform the original air traffic controller, 18 minutes had passed since the disappearance. So they spent 18 minutes trying to, like, contact them, trying to, why did this disappear? And then they decided to contact the original people. And this confused them a lot. Like, this, they were like, how does, they were confused themselves. They were like, how does this plane just disappear? Mind you, this is already after 9/11.
Yeah.
So I can just imagine that, you know, some, like, what is going through their head and what they're trying to, like, figure out. So I do know, let's see. So they did... They did not, they contacted the Aeronautical Rescue Coordination Center. They had, within the hour that it went missing, they had that hour to contact them. But by 2:30, they didn't, like, it had already been more than an hour and they had not contacted that center yet. And it was 4 more hours before they sent out an emergency response at 6:32 a.m. So this plane is missing for 5... Like, the plane should have already landed.
Yeah, because by then, I think the fuel would have ran out. So...
Yeah.
They had to have landed or something. Oh, hi, kitty.
Oh. Yeah, she's... Oh, my gosh, she's crazy. She's psycho. So then they finally decided, like... then they start the search, right? They tell the families, like, who knows what they told the families? Like, I don't know what you tell your family. Like, we don't know where the plane's at.
Yeah. I saw a video with, like, the press conference and all that, and it was just, it's sad because you just see how angry all those families are, and they're like, what are you doing? And then like days later, I think they had another press conference, and you could see, like, the families actually, like, throw water bottles at the officials because they're pissed off. It's like, And so I would be, too.
I would be livid. So when they, so when the plane should have been landing in Beijing, that's when the search started. I feel like that's a little too late, you know?
That was an error because if they noticed that a plane had went off radar, was delayed, wasn't getting response, they should have had, like, people up in the air trying to find them.
I think, like, literally the moment, like, and within the hour that it went missing, they would have been able to find the plane somewhere in the air.
Yeah, and that's another thing, because it's like, we see what happened with 9/11. It's like, this has become, like, a thing where, like, if there's suspicious activity, regardless of what the worst case scenario would be, it's like, you need to have someone up in the ground and go. Because I remember reading about how, like, with 9/11, it was like, once they got word that multiple planes had been hijacked, they called every plane to land, and if they hadn't landed, they were gonna, like, send people up there and, like, force them to come down.
Yeah. So. And I think that they should have done that. Like.
Yeah.
If it was only an hour out, like, they would have found the plane. Like, yeah. Even regardless of the paths they took, like you can figure something out there. Like.
Yeah, and it's also probably one of the articles you've read said it, because I know when I watched this documentary, even, like, countries in, like, the countries that the plane had originally, like, passed over, they even reported that they believed that they had saw the plane, and, like, either up in the air passing over, or they had, like, gotten word of them on their thing. So it's all like, and they even wondering, like, why is this plane going in this direction?
Yeah.
So
they had 34 ships and 28 aircrafts from 7 different countries all looking for this plane after when they started the search. And they started the search in the South China Sea. But that's where I think that they're wrong. I don't think they should have started there. They should have started way further out than what they did. So they, within the matter of days, it says that the primary radar records were salvaged from the air traffic control's computers. And they revealed that that's when it had disappeared from the second radar. That when it disappeared from the second radar, it took a sharp turn to the southwest and flew back across the Malay Peninsula. And then banked around the island of Penang. And there, it flew northwest up the Strait of Malacca. I'm so sorry if I'm butchering these names, guys. And then it flew out across the Andaman Sea, where it faded beyond radar range into obscurity. So, like, they were literally, like, just going. Like, they took, a crazy path. Like, that's not, like, something, like, that was, like, not even.
Yeah, that was abnormal. Just there was too many turns going in different directions, and it's like, why? What? And I know that there was this one theory that, because we're probably going to get into theories, and it's all like, did they, like, was it, like, manually, like, the autopilot set back? And it's like, okay, that's one thing, but then why did it go out toward the Indian Ocean?
Mm-hmm.
There's just so many questions.
Yeah, so it says here that everything that I said, like, their path that they took there,
mm-hmm.
took more than an hour to accomplish. So in the first hour, they were going like all over these different places. And that it was not, it did not, it's that that path suggested that it was not a standard case of hijacking, which to me seems like that is a standard case of hijacking. I'm like, that sounds like they're being hijacked.
Yeah.
But they also said that it didn't also seem like an accident or a pilot suicide scenario that anyone had encountered before. So it was, I guess what they just mean is that like, the path they took and what they were doing did not was not your usual case of hijacking, pilot suicide that they've seen before.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I don't like. I just I don't. I mean, we'll get into theories later, but I have there's some theories out there.
There's some theories.
So it says that a Beijing 7. Or what is it? The kind of plane it is? It's not Beijing. It's a...
Boeing.
Boeing, yeah. It's meant to be electronically accessible at all times. Because of, like, just how big it is, you know? Like they just need to always keep track of it. Let's see... Obviously, it just says that there's, like, tons of theories.
Yeah. I'm looking at the Britannica, and there's a couple of theories where it says some proposed MH370 disappeared theories are more believable than others, including theories that the plane was remotely hijacked or redirected, that cracks formed in the plane's exterior, a known problem with similar planes, or that the pilot sabotaged the plane. There's one theory that we'll get into that I'm kind of leaning more in, which is it's not like worse thing. It's kind of like there was a technical error that just unfortunately like happened. But we'll get into theories.
Yeah, definitely. So there was actually someone who I guess was like an investigator, and he wanted to, after figuring out, like, what happened or, like, real, like, you know, the news came out, he wanted to go out and, like, try to find out what happened. So, he actually went to, he found out that the plane had continued to link up intermittently with the geostationary Indian Ocean satellite operated by Inmarsat, which is a vendor in London, and it contacted them or was in like transmission with them for 6 hours after the plane disappeared from the second radar. So that makes me think that maybe the technicality issue was the radar itself, and it was possible that the radar, that they didn't turn off the radar for wherever they were going, that they turned off the radar was just linking up to a different one, which it says here that that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing that's a little, that's super weird. So it says here that, so that meant that the plane had not suddenly suffered some catastrophic event, and that during those 6 hours, it is presumed to have remained in high-speed, high-altitude cruising flight. So it says here, because the intended contents of the system, the passenger entertainment, cockpit text, automated maintenance reports, had been isolated or switched off. So that's like a big, I mean, like the, especially the cockpit text and then the automated maintenance reports being switched off are like a telltale sign that someone switched it off, you know?
Yeah.
And then it also says that there was two satellite phone calls, but they went unanswered, but provided additional data. So those satellite phone calls were from inside the plane. but they weren't answered.
Yeah.
It says that that gave them more data, though, and it says that most of the connections were two values that Inmarsat had only recently begun to log. So it says the first of more accurate of the values is known as first as the burst timing offset, that they call distance value. So it measures the transmission time to and from the airplane. And so if they were making a call, the distance that they were not receiving the call when they were calling. Which kind of, like, it kind of it makes sense because of how far away it was. I don't know. Like,
yeah.
Something with their thing, like, did not tow them, like, right then and there.
Yeah.
So it says the plane's distance from the, like, satellite that they were trying, like, whatever, was too far for them not to pinpoint a single location. And that just gives them, like, that's just, like, really vague. So that just gives them, like now, like, a ton of other possibilities of what happened.
Yeah. Dang, I'm trying to look at the how much. Because I think it was, like, billions of dollars were spent on this search.
Oh, yeah. So it says, the most important arc is the seventh and last one, because they had seven pinpoints to the Inmarsat center. And that last one, they defined it as a final handshake tied in a complex ways that said, that was kind of like, what that final thing was hinted to them, or whatever was like the pinpoint or whatever, was said that they were having fuel exhaustion and failure to the main engines. That final pinpoint that they got, because, and I don't know if, like, what that pinpoint tells them, but maybe the thing that shows me possibly is, like, all of the other ones, you know, were at certain elevations, but that last one was at significantly lower, or, like, a descending elevation. That's what that kind of, like, tells me a little bit from that, what they say there. But it says, the seventh arc stretches from Central Asia in the north to the vicinity of Antarctica in the south. So it's a very vague arc. Like, it's very vague, like, you know.
Yeah.
But also, they were so far away from the satellite that that's why it's, like, super vague as to, like, where exactly it was. But, it says that the plane at 8:19, it touched that arc, or, like, that final pinpoint at 8:19 a.m. So that's, like, I mean, the plane was going strong for, like, 7 hours.
Yeah.
They were pretty, probably, like, low on, like, gas badly.
Yeah. And it was supposed to be a 5-hour journey. So it's like, what's up with those last 2 hours? What's up with any of it?
Yeah. And what's just, like, so the investigator who decided to, like, take over actually said this, that he says, judging from electronic evidence, this was not a controlled attempt at a water landing, and they think that the airplane must have fractured into a million pieces. That's what this investigator thinks.
If it landed, I think, yeah, because, like, well, how is it? I know that if a plane lands a certain way, then it could probably stay afloat. But if it, like, lands, I think it's what? If it lands horizontally, then that impact will literally, like, blow it into pieces.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the thing I'm leaning toward what happened, where I think, because there's this thing where it's like, what if something happened in the plane, like a fire or like decompressing, and it knocked them out. It knocked everyone out. And so when they saw that, they tried to reroute it back to the Malaysian airport, but then they got knocked out and everybody was unconscious. And then that's why it went toward the Indian Ocean and then unfortunately runs out of fuel and then lands that way and then goes into millions of pieces.
Yeah, I think that that would also be an explanation for like why we don't see a lot of like wreckage or bodies or things like that.
Yeah.
Is, you know, that would be a good explanation for that. Let's see.
That's just sad.
It says really that the plane, judging on the radars and stuff like that, like that they were getting, or the satellite, that the plane was flying at a very straight and level for a long while in the general direction of Antarctica. Which is like way beyond its range, but that's what they showed. Yeah. That for so after they had turned north, and then they went west, and then they went south towards Antarctica for a long time, it says. So this is what it says. After 6 hours, the Doppler data indicated a steep descent, as much as 5 times greater than a normal descent rate, which means that like. It, usually a plane descends or like this, right? Like this.
Yeah, but they go at,
they're but going they like went, almost 90.
Yeah. That that's kind of like what happened with flight 93 from 9/11. It like went like that. Yeah. It was like that's how it like hit the ground and just exploded.
Yeah. And then from that too, from that explosion and that crash, we don't see a lot of, like, the wreckage wasn't as great as I think you would assume. Like, seeing pictures of the wreckage, it was kind of, like, it disappeared, too. Like, it was kind of, like...
It was, like just gone, and it...
Yeah.
I mean, they found pieces miles away from where it initially hit. And by then, the bodies are kind of... I don't want to say sound morbid, but the bodies by then are crisp, with an explosion. So... Mm-hmm.
I guess that would make sense. And then I know, like, if you're in a plane, I know this because I was also kind of obsessed with Sully, the guy who landed the plane on the harbor. Love him. Yeah. He's a great guy. But he also said, like, when you're hitting, if you hit water, like, it's going to feel the same impact like if you were about to hit, like, ground.
Yeah.
Like, it's like you're hitting it and the tension makes it seem like concrete.
Yeah, especially if you're coming in that many miles per hour.
Oh, yeah. They've been going at steady, and they're 35,000 feet up. And then they said that it's going at a steep descent, 5 times greater than a normal descent rate.
Yeah.
What's a normal descent rate for a plane? Let's see.
Let's see.
Okay. So it says that they go from like, so a lot of it is actually controlled by the computer that they have on a plane, apparently. Let's see. So it says that usually they start its descent about 100 to 120 miles from the destination. So if they're like at a 35,000 feet or 30,000 feet, they'll start slowly doing it. So that it's like gradual. So they have a speed restriction of 250 knots below 10,000 feet. So if they're going over, let's just say like when they get to, let's just say they have to slow down 250 knots every time they're going, so 250 times 5 is like 10,000 or 1,250. Wow, guys, I don't know math.
Oops.
So if they're going, let's just say that they're going five times over, and it's 1,250 knots, which is like fast.
Fast. They're going hella fast.
that kind of it kind of sucks, but like that kind of puts me at ease a little bit, because whatever happened, I feel like it happened quickly.
Yeah.
It wasn't, I mean, I think at this point, there was, the passengers were probably awake at this point. If they were already like 6-7 hours past the yeah. time they were supposed to land, I would have thought that maybe for the beginning, they were probably all asleep for a good, for the most part.
Yeah.
You know, it's late in the night, but then by the time like the sun starts coming up, I would even like to imagine, just at like to put me at ease, that if that, if we're going to go with that theory, that just the speed of it and maybe knock them out. They were unconscious.
Yeah, because usually if you're falling, I think even like people have said, like who have fallen like from high feet that have like survived, usually the
you
speed,
pass out.
The speed, it disorients your brain and it knocks you out.
Yeah, so the part, I mean, like, I would like to think that that happened, if we're going with that theory.
Yeah.
Which I think maybe, I mean, I think that maybe, like, a lot of the family, the families maybe would probably, hopefully, you know, think of it like that, too. Because that's, I would not like to think that they, like, suffered or anything like that.
Yeah.
So let's see. The Wall Street Journal published a report on it a week after it disappeared. I mean, everyone was like infatuated with this plane. It says here that they wanted to start an underwater search for them. And ultimately centered on a narrow swath of ocean around thousands of miles away. But, I mean, even if they do that one day, like, that's a huge amount of area to even try to cover.
Yeah.
I mean, it took them forever to find the Titanic. Like.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's, like, what else was it? They said that, like, their search ground was as big as Canada. And Canada's huge.
Yeah.
And the water, I mean, we barely don't even know. Like, the one thing about our oceans is that they have not been searched. Like, we don't even know what's in our oceans. We don't even know how. I don't even think they know for sure how deep the ocean floor is. So it's like. Because, like, I think the one thing about, like, the earth and the ocean floor is that it gets, like, deeper and deeper and deeper. Because Titanic. Mm-hmm. You know, they were able to locate Titanic. Unfortunately, Titanic is going to disintegrate eventually. I think they want to rise her up from the surface, but I don't think it's
possible. I kind of wish they did. I feel so terrible that
yeah.
That it's, like, literally disintegrating.
Yeah.
And it makes me very sad.
Yeah.
I'm kind of obsessed with Titanic, too. That's another thing that I'm obsessed with.
Oh, my God. There's, is it in Florida? Yeah, I think it's in Florida, because Rachel had posted about it. She went to the Titanic Museum.
There's also one in Tennessee.
Ooh.
And it's like a replica of the boat.
Oh my gosh.
And like, it's like huge. And I, for the longest time, I wanted to have like a Titanic party.
Oh my God, that'd be
I'm
so
like,
cute.
I'm obsessed with Titanic. It's fascinating to me. Especially the movie too, also.
And it's one of those, it's kind of like with this, like this case, it's like, it's tragic that it happened. Cause yeah. Like, it could have possibly been prevented.
Also, I think also I believe in past lives 100%. I feel like I was a passenger on the Titanic. I it's so weird because sometimes, like, I'll watch videos and I just, like, cry.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And
you feel, like, a connection to it that you can't explain.
Yeah, it's so weird.
I believe in past lives, too. I like doing those hypnotic ones, even though they probably aren't real, but I always
I've done them a couple of times. I've done it 2 times. I don't even remember what my first one was. don't even remember. Oh, I do remember. I basically, oh, it was tragic. But oh, my mom was there. My mom was like my, what was she? Like a midwife. And I had a stillborn. This is terrible. And then I knew that Carlos was my husband in that past life too, because I didn't even see his face, but like I saw his hand and I knew that that was Carlos's hand. And we lived in like a village. It was like very, very. And then I unalived myself.
Oh my god.
Because of my stillborn baby. That's so sad.
Oh my gosh. So since you believe in past lives and like kind of like reincarnation and stuff, do you think that like, do you believe that theory of like birthmarks are like their like indications of like
where you would have been killed?
Killed or wounded in a past life?
Maybe. I have actually two. I think I have one on my leg. Where is it? I'm like, do I not have it anywhere? No, I still have it. It's somewhere here. I know I have one in like my thigh area, and then I have one on my stomach. Ooh. But it's really weird, because something really weird about like my mom's side of the family is we all have a similar birthmark. Ooh. Like it's like it's usually like same shape, and like the one on my stomach is like, and it's usually darker, like a little darker than your skin. Like, and the one that I have on my leg is lighter than my skin color. Like it's like a little whiter. But this one is darker, like everyone in my family has, my sister, just use it. Everyone in my family has one like that. It's really weird. And so I don't know if that's like a generational thing, maybe, who knows. But I don't know if I told you, but I went and saw a psychic, I think it was like the beginning of quarantine. And like, she told me that like me and my family, like my siblings and my mom and my husband have been together many different past lives.
That's so sweet. I love that.
I know. And so I was like, I truly feel like I was probably a passenger on the Titanic or something. And it's crazy because my sister actually did the past life regression too. And in her past life, she said that I was like her baby. Like I was her child. And she died. And when I was like a preteen or something like that. And that, like, because after the past life, like, regression, your spirit guide comes and talks to you, kind of tells you, like, what, like, happened. And, like, her spirit guide told her that after she died, I was alone.
Oh, my gosh.
I was well, thanks for dying. I was like, that's great.
I want to do one of those. I need to do one of those again. Oh, my God. I think the They're first one so I did. They're always so emotional. Yeah, I think, like, the first one, one of the first ones I did, I think it told me that I was a nurse in one of the world wars. Not sure which one, but I remember seeing myself in, like, an old-style uniform, like a nurse's uniform. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is crazy.
But yeah, so Titanic, but it also, it took them forever to find the Titanic.
Yeah.
Because they had, like, a general area, but then also, like, it separated, and,
also
like,
technology.
Yeah. And so, I feel like it would take them, like, a lot quicker to find this plane than it took them to find Titanic in the 90s.
Literally, like, come on. As much as I don't like the guy, Elon Musk... help them out. You can definitely develop something. You're trying to inhabit Mars with your technology. Find this plane.
Yeah. And then, you know, and I just thought about it too. Like, it's so weird that I didn't even think about it until like now that I added a character in the book that that was a vampire on the Titanic.
Ah! I can't. Jeez. Yes. Oh my God. Oh my God.
I didn't even, like, realize.
Can't wait for this summer for us to finally get started on that project. Jeez. We got 1 month. A month and a half.
Yeah.
Whenever. Yeah. Because I know I get out in a month, but I know you probably have till, like, mid to late May.
Yeah, like, at the... Yeah, when we get closer, we'll probably not be doing much, to be honest. Okay. So, This is where we get to a part where they start looking for debris, because they're like, look, we're probably not going to find an intact plane in the ocean, at the bottom of the ocean. You know, like, we're not going to find one like that.
Yeah.
If you think about it, like, anything that would have been in the luggage, that's, like, all flammable and can, you know.
And all that jet fuel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, like, they probably will only be able to find, like, debris or parts of the plane. Bless you.
Thank you. I did not want to, like, sneeze in your ear. That would have been
You're fine. This was 16 months after the plane had went missing. They were doing a beach cleanup on the French island of it looks like Reunion. But it's, like, has, like, an accent, so I'm not even sure how to say that. And they came upon a torn piece of airfoil that was 6 feet long, and it seemed to have washed ashore. So they realized that it might have come from a plane, but he didn't know which one. He considered making it into a memorial. So that's great that he even thought about that. But he called a local, but instead of making a memorial, he called a local radio station, and they brought the news, and they determined it to be part of a Boeing 777, and that it was a control surface called a flaperon that is attached to the trailing edge of the wing. And they said that with subsequent examination of serial numbers, it showed that it had definitely come from Malaysian Flight 370. So I guess that kind of put all the other theories to rest, but we're going to talk about them still.
Yeah.
So they said that that it came from Malaysian Flight 370, which is, I mean, like, groundbreaking for them to even, like, find something like that, you know?
Yeah.
He also looked for other debris and didn't really think he would find anything, and they didn't find anything else. But, I mean, from that, I mean, it would take a long time from it to get to where they might have, like, crashed to where it got, you know? And you know what? The ocean is so scary. If you think, like, because whenever we go to, like, the island and we go to, like, the last access, which is where, like, you have to have, like, a four-wheel drive to go. Because, like, if not, you'll get stuck. And, like, on the side, like, you just see tons of, like, what is it called? Oh, my God. Like trees. But there's, like, a name for it. It's, like, oh, my God. What is it? It's, like, ocean, like, I'm not ocean wood. Let me see. Kind of like in La Push. Oh, driftwood. Oh my gosh, I'm so stupid. Driftwood is just, like, there washed up. And it's just like, one, how did a tree land in the ocean, probably from, like, a river or a lake or something like that, right? But, like, yeah. For it to travel so far.
Yeah.
And you're like, what the heck? Like, and, like, that tree could be from, like, literally anywhere in the world. That driftwood. Yeah. That's crazy. That makes me uncomfortable. That makes me very uncomfortable.
That's suspicious.
Yeah, and it's just like, how do you even, like, like, what? And I wonder if there's even a way to trace it back to where it came from. And you can, like, see how old they are, but...
Well, you could actually... I mean, plants have DNA, so you could definitely probably do a plant DNA test just, like, with humans. So, yeah. Definitely.
Let's see. Then the guy who found this the plane, he got really invested in it and wanted to, like, look more for it. So he ended up going to Mozambique because he said that he had not been there before and he could like also use it as like, oh, I've been to 107 like seven countries, which is like, okay, like weird flex, like he's like, I'm gonna turn it into a vacation. And then he got there in February 2016. He went around town asking locals where fishermen would go to collect nets and buoys that washed in from the ocean, from the Indian Ocean. And they took him there. And he said that they found a lot of junk, but he said that he found a piece of, it was a gray triangular scrap that was like 2 feet long or something like that. And then he asked, is this 370? Like, I feel like that's such like a weird thing to like, I don't know. This guy seems like a little, this guy's like a little sketch.
Yeah.
It said that the scrap had a honeycomb structure and the stenciled words, no step on one surface. So it said no step on one of the surfaces of the this thing. So that could be from a plane, you know, like you can't step up. I don't know.
Yeah.
I haven't been on a plane in a long time. He said, so my mind was telling me it was not from the plane, but my heart was telling me it's the plane. So they took it back to the boat. And he said that he saw dolphins, and then when he saw the dolphins, he thought that the dolphins were a sign that it was from the plane.
What?
This guy's a little.
He's just a little.
And, it turns out that he was right, apparently. So it says that the scrap he found was from a horizontal stabilizer panel that was determined to almost certainly be from Malaysian Flight 370. And then he went to Maputo and handed the debris to the Australian consul. Wow.
Mm.
So this guy found already 2 pieces. And then this is in 2016. I feel like that seems really planted, no? Like he's just finding these pieces all of a sudden.
Yeah.
That's weird. So then he went to the shores of Madagascar. And he said that this is where he found the mother load. He said he found 3 pieces on the first day and then 2 pieces a few days later. The following week on a beach 8 miles away, 3 more pieces were delivered to him. And so word has gotten out that he will pay for Malaysian Flight 370 debris. He says he once paid so much for a piece, $40, that an entire village went on a day-long bender. That I guess like they had the scrap and then he was like, I'm going to buy that from you. And he bought it for them for $40. I guess. He said a lot of debris had washed up that had nothing to do with the plane, but several dozen pieces that had been identified to date as certain or likely or suspected to have come from Malaysian Flight 370. So he's been responsible for discovering a third of the scraps that they've discovered. And some of the pieces are still being investigated. So, But they haven't been able to work backwards. Like they know where they're washing up, but they don't know like where it's coming from, which makes sense because it's like the ocean is giant. This here says so. Okay, let's see. He wants to find, like, a message in a bottle, is what he says. Like, he wants to find either a note of desperation that someone wrote in his or her last moments. He said that on the beaches, he's found a few backpacks and a large number of purses, which all have been empty. He says the closest he has come to finding such a note was a message written in Malay on the underside of a baseball cap, and it read to, and it translated to whom it may concern, my dear friend, meet me at the guest house later. But I'm not sure what that means.
I'm not sure either.
Huh. This guy, I don't know about this guy.
Yeah.
Well, I have to, I don't know, but I mean, like, he's been recognized by, like, countries for helping find these pieces. So, I mean, if they trust him, I guess, maybe.
Yeah,
we'll see.
That are just, like, very coincidence that he happened to, like, find.
Yeah. So let's look at some of the possible theories. I have a couple. A couple of theories. I mean, there was lots of theories, actually, when everything was first happening. So the first theory that we have is that there was a cockpit fire. It's probably the most plausible of theories that another pilot actually said that this is probably the most certain, because it says here that the fire in a cockpit would have led the captain to turn to the west toward one of the places they turned that was a nearby airstrip, and then the loss of communication with the cockpit, you know, kind of says that there was a cockpit fire. He said that it's similar, that there was probably an electrical fire, and that the crew and the need for the crew to focus on flying the plane rather than radioing in a distress call. He thinks that the pilots could have passed out or succumbed to smoke inhalation with the plane flying for hours until it ran out of fuel and crashed. And it says, I mean, that sounds the most logical to me.
I think the reason why I'm leaning toward that also is because it kind of makes the most sense. It's the most logical. And also, part of me is all, like, doesn't want to think that plane was hijacked. Because...
Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems like both of the pilots were, you know... I mean, you never know, right? But it seemed like they were good people. I mean, they had a goal. Like, he was trying to become a pilot. I don't know. The second theory, which is a little out there, but it says that it was hijacked and that the Russian special ops took it.
I've heard that one. I've also heard one that North Korea could have also been it.
Yeah, so it says here that that they think that they could have broken into the electronics and equipment bay on the Boeing 777 and access through the first class cabin, and that a well-trained hijacker could theoretically have started pulling the plane's electronics apart and faked some of the satellite data that research has found and used to try to pinpoint the path of flight. Mm-hmm. Someone who, like, really believes this claims that the plane must have gone north into Asia rather than south over the Indian Ocean and into Kazakhstan, where there are runways and buildings large enough to hide a Boeing 777, and that it's that they've researched it a lot, but it doesn't prove anything. Yeah, I mean, I guess it's possible.
It is possible. The question is, what would the motive be? Because usually with hijackings, you know, there's a motive.
So there's a motive, and they usually, like, say that they want to take credit for it, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing, that someone would want to take credit for it, and I don't think any like terrorist group or anything or like has claimed responsibility, so it's possible, but it's like, there's this, so who knows?
Yeah. Another theory was that it was a faked flight plan. So they suggest that someone on board hijacked the plane and kept its location concealed by faking a flight plan from an uncontrolled airport. Then the pilots could pretend to be a small business jet and proceed to some hidden airfield somewhere with no one the wiser, except for the fact that it's tricky to hide a Boeing 777 and several hundred passengers and crew. So, like, that they, that I guess it seems that they wanted the pilot, like, the pilots were in on it.
Yeah.
And they faked this plan, and they went and they landed a Boeing 777 somewhere with several hundred, like, a lot of people. Which, I mean, like, okay, like, I can see that happening, but then I feel like, I don't know, like, what happens then?
Yeah.
You know? This other one's a little controversial, but it's that the U.S. military shot it down.
Yeah, I heard that theory.
that there is a U.S. military base located in the middle of the Indian Ocean, and one theory suggests that the plane was headed there on some sort of kamikaze mission, and it was secretly shot down by the U.S. military before it could reach its target. The Americans would have then faked the satellite data and scooped up every last bit of debris to keep the fate of the plane and its passengers a secret. This one is particularly unlikely since the cleanup of the airplane would have taken way too many people to keep things quiet, is what it says. Which, I mean, I could see possibly them shooting it down because maybe they thought that, like, if the plane was, like, coming towards them and they're not able to contact it, something was wrong, so, like, you know, maybe that is a possibility, but then I feel like they would have said something.
Yeah.
And they would have tried to been like, oh, like, they were coming towards us and whatever, you know? Like, yeah. I think they would have said that, you know, it was them.
Yeah.
Another theory is that it's in Pakistan, that the plane's disappearance was part of a jihadist plot to make trouble for China, and that the flight could have landed in northern Pakistan, and that others have said the plane could be outfitted with explosives or even a nuclear weapon for future delivery, as if a big, slow, less than agile passenger jet is the best tool for that, is what it says. So, I mean, I don't think that one's a good one. I feel like the U.S. military is also in Pakistan. That would have been, like, a known thing. Like you said, you can't hide a Boeing 777. Like, it's a huge-ass plane.
They couldn't do that.
And then there's another one that I think is my favorite one, and it's probably the least likely, but supernatural forces.
Yeah.
And this actually took, this one is, like, really big on Reddit. And there's theories that it was snatched out of the sky by aliens, or that a wormhole sent it back in time. Because there's a TV show. There's a TV show. I forgot what it's called. It's called, like, Flight something. But it's a thing where they're in the plane, right? This is, like, the first episode. They're in the plane, and then they get to, like, tons of turbulence. Like, literally, like, tons of turbulence. And then everything's fine, and then they land. But when they land, they're, like, police and everyone surround them, and they're like, what's going on, right? And then they were like, everyone gets down off the plane, and they were like, are you flight, blah, 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 and they're like, yeah, and they're like, you've been missing for 5 years. And everyone was like, what do you mean? We were like, we've been on the plane for, like, 30 minutes or something like that. So when they come back, everyone's grown, like, it's like they... It's a crazy show.
That sounds very cool.
It's very cool.
I gotta watch this.
And it's so sad because the girl who was on the plane, she was on the plane with her brother, and she was like, so right before they went on the plane, I think she had got engaged, like, someone proposed to her, and she said no. And when on the plane, her brother convinced her to say yes, but they got off, and he was, like, already with someone else.
Oh, sad.
That sucks, right? Let me see what it's called. Because it's such, oh my god. And so that's kind of like a theory that I'm like, ooh, that'd be so interesting. When I was watching this, I when I watched it, I was like, imagine if like one day like a Boeing 77 lands in like where it was supposed to land, and they're like, what are you doing here? And they're like, what do you mean we're scheduled to land here? And then like
they asked their flight, and we're like, we're flight 370.
That would be wild.
Oh my god, that mind blown.
That would be literally crazy. Is it not that one? Let's see. Okay. What is it called? I feel like it's on Hulu. I could have sworn it's probably on Hulu. And I'm pretty sure I finished it. Let's see, is this it? It's called Manifest, yeah. So this is what it says. When Montego Air Flight 828 landed safely after a turbulent but routine flight, the crew and passengers were relieved, but in the span of those few hours, the world had aged 5 years, and after mourning their loss, their friends, families, and colleagues had given up hope and moved on. Now faced with the impossible, they're all given a second chance, but as their new reality becomes clear, a deeper mystery unfolds, and some of the returned passengers soon realize that they may be meant for something greater than ever possible. So, like, it starts off with this whole, like, time travel stuff, but, like, crazy stuff starts happening, like, in the middle of it. It's, like, wild. Ooh. So definitely something to look out for, but that was something also like that I possibly thought of, like, what if like they went into an alternate universe portal or something, like, you never know.
Wow. Okay, I am adding this to my list because this sounds very interesting, and plus I just finished my show Broadchurch, so I'm in need of a new show.
I just started watching WandaVision, and I'm a little obsessed. I just finished episode 4, so I'm like,
oh my god, yeah, I know exactly. I am watching, well, when I get back to my dorm, because my roommate's the one with Disney Plus, so when I get back, her and I gotta catch up on Falcon and the Winter Soldier, because
that's why I wanted to start watching WandaVision, so that I could start The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, because I'm on a little, like, Bucky Barnes binge right now. Like, I'm a little obsessed with him.
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. I cannot wait to
I had texted the group chat yesterday, and I was like, guys, I get caved in. I started watching WandaVision. And then Cherish goes, how are you feeling? And I was like, honestly, kind of sad.
Yeah. It's, oh, my God. It's so good. But you're going to, can't wait to hear your thoughts when you finish.
Okay, so then there's a new theory that just came out this was updated in 2021, but their theory is that the French investigative journalists think that it was shot down by the U.S. Air Force 7 years ago, and that came out in 2021.
Oh my gosh!
And that they think that the U.S. is covering it up. All that stuff. I mean, I wouldn't put it past them, you know, maybe. But part of the supernatural theory is that either it was, you know, aliens, a wormhole that sent it back into time, or a black hole that ate the plane. Anything, I guess, is possible, right? You never know. And then there was an article in 2020 that experts say that they have located the crash site. So they think that Let's see. Where is it at? They think that there are better than even odds that the plane is within 100 nautical miles of its last estimated point. They said that investigators have been looking in the wrong spot, which we know that they have been looking everywhere but where they should.
Yeah.
He thinks that the pilot was trying to ditch the aircraft as far south as possible so that little wreckage would be found. So this person thinks that the pilot was kind of, I guess, trying to whatever. The last operation of aircraft ended in May 2018 when the United States-based exploration company failed to locate the aircraft after searching more than 112,000 square kilometers of the ocean floor over 3 months. But so, I mean, I guess they didn't really locate it. They just think that it's within 100 miles of its last pinpoint. So, I mean, I guess. Wow. I feel bad for the families.
I do too. Because, like, they probably have an idea of what happened, and I hope that gives them some kind of closure.
Yeah.
But they, I mean, if I was in their shoes, even if I had that kind of closure, wondering, like, this is probably what happened, I'd still be like, well, maybe what if? Like, what if somehow there's, like, they ended up landing somewhere, and it's just sad. Like, how does a plane... There was definitely some errors on the ground for not taking it as serious as they should have when the first, like, kind of things came in.
Yeah.
Definitely the investigation also went a little off with how they were searching probably the wrong area. Because now it's been 7 years and it's, like, no clear answer.
Yeah. And it's just like, I'm like, what do you do? I mean, like, even if they, let's say they were able to, like, within that hour, they were able to locate the plane, but they had a malfunction. How do you even, like, what do you do?
Yeah.
How do you make, and, like, what do you do? Like, I don't, like, you can't, like, fly the planes close together and, like, transfer the, like, the passengers, like.
Yeah. Yeah, it was...
There's, like, no... There's no answer. Like, you can't... It's not like a... Like, you can't tow it. Like...
Yeah, it's just... Sorry, I got you. Oh, sorry. Fine.
Even if, like, helicopters can't even go that high. So, even if they, like...
Yeah. Like, I mean, and, like, military jets were are fast enough that they could have gotten there. But even there, then... It's like you said, how are they going to land? How are they really going to transfer the people over?
Yeah.
Especially with that angle that they believe it was flying.
It's a sticky situation, you know?
Yeah.
Like, even if they were to have to find it and it was in the air, how are they going to land the plane? How are they going to transfer the patient? Like, how are they going to... Or the passengers, you know? Like, yeah. I think it's just... It kind of seemed like inevitable, you know, like it, like even if they were to find it, like it would have, something would have happened.
Yeah.
So, that sucks. There was a book. I don't know why. I guess I've always been like fascinated with like airplane crashes, because there was a book I remember reading when I was younger about an airplane crash, and I don't remember much about it, but I do remember that like they crashed the airplane, and someone had a hatchet. That's all I remember. But I remember reading about it.
Oh, yeah. I'm also, like, there's, oh, my God. There's this show, I think, on the Smithsonian Channel, or one of the channels my mom likes. It's called Air Disasters. And it's all about, like, instances of, like, aviation crashes. And, like, a lot of them, like, that was the reason why the Concorde like jets stopped flying was because although they're like the fastest and new innovative thing, but they just had too many problems. And then also there's let me see if it's still on Netflix. But is it still on? Oh man, I don't know if it's still on Netflix. I watched it when it was, but there's this movie called Nerja, and it's based on the true story of Nerja Banot, I hope I'm saying that right, who was a stewardess on Pan Am Flight 73, who that plane got hijacked while it was still on the ground, and she had basically, she lost her life that day along with a few other passengers, but her actions had saved many on board.
Oh.
And it's a good, it's sad. Because she was very young.
It's very, I mean, I feel like there's not a lot of interest. I mean, like, there's more car crashes than plane crashes, you know? Yeah. And I mean, like, even because, I mean, we're going to Forks in... but I feel safe.
Yeah.
Like with you know, and I think that, you know, I think planes are one of the safest ways to travel.
Yeah. So. I feel safe. I feel more safer on a plane than on a car. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, same. In the plane, in the air, there's no like 18-wheeler like trucks that get super close to you, so that's a plus.
Yeah.
Knock on wood. I'm like, this case like fascinates me. It's just like, like, we don't really have, like, a clear answer. And I think the one that makes more sense is, like, that something was wrong, they couldn't land, and then they... But my question is just, like, why did they go so far south?
Yeah.
Like, why not go somewhere where you can, like, land? Or, I don't know. But then also, like, if they weren't even able to, like, land... Like, and they were just doing a dive, like, they dived, then I guess maybe... The farther away they were from, like, civilization, like, they wouldn't just harm, like, people who were not even on the plane, you know? So.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Sad. It is very sad. Well, and I think, like, clearly there's, like, there were no survivors.
Oh, no. There.
At all, so.
There's no survivors. And also, I feel like if something would have happened where, like, they did land and they're out there, I feel like with technology and, like, tracking and, like, all the different agencies in the world, like, they would have spotted someone who was on that plane. And since there hasn't been, I think it's too easy to... I think it's correct to assume that there were no survivors that day.
And I think 7 years after, I mean... I don't think the plane is intact like Titanic.
Oh, no.
It's in several pieces. So I think, like, I think that there's a lot of things that went wrong on, like, I guess the investigator's side. Like, one, they should have, like, contacted, like, as soon as it went off, like, the radar.
Yeah.
Two, I think they should have, like, I think they totally did not search in the wrong, like, they searched in the wrong area to begin with. They waited too long to search for them. And I just don't know. They said that they had, like, 28 aircrafts looking for them. And it's like, well, where are you flying to look for them? Like,
yeah. That was another thing that I saw that got a lot of criticism is during their search, there was, like, TV crews at the airport. And they didn't send out all the planes that were there to go on the air search. And it's like... Like, there, like, the TV reporter was like, as you can see, we have several planes here that have been sitting here for hours. None are in the air. What's going on? So it's like, you have all these ships, all these planes. You have governments spending thousands, trillions of dollars trying to help with this and half of the search team is still on the ground not doing anything.
Yeah, I mean, although like the supernatural theory is always like the funner one or the one that's more like, I guess, interesting, or, you know, I definitely think that there had to have been a cockpit fire, electrical fire, something, that's why they started like flying south. They were trying to land, they couldn't land because they couldn't contact the people to land, because when you like land, like you need to like let them know that you're landing, and when you can't do that because there's something wrong with your technical things, and there's nothing to do but just start and just fly.
Yeah.
And I could just imagine like what was going through their heads at the moment, like for 7 hours, like, hey, like we just have to fly, and like we're going to die. Like they knew it. Like it wasn't something that like they like didn't see coming, like an accident. Like they knew that they were going to, because they knew that they were just flying.
Yeah.
With no destination, no way to land, no way to contact anyone. And that sucks. That's like, and I just hope that, I mean, at least we know like the children were probably with their parents.
Yeah.
Some of them probably had family members with them. And if they, you know, if they were alone, then hopefully they were able to like find peace in the person that whoever was around them. It's just sad. Yeah. That sucks. Yeah. Wow. This case was, it's a mystery. You don't know.
Oh.
And it brings me back to like, okay, let's say they found them while they're in the air, but what do they do?
That's the $1 million question. What would they do?
Maybe that's why they didn't start the search right away. Yeah. Maybe they were like, okay, well, let's say we find them, but like, what do we do when we find them?
Yeah.
We can't contact them because they're not contacting us. They're off, like, the radar. So maybe they were just like, well, let's wait. And because we have to remember that, like, all the information that we have, like, about the satellites and all that stuff and the descent, that came out after the fact. After all the searches had happened and all that. So, wow.
What a case.
It really is. But we're at the time where now we can determine whether we think this case is extreme. Wait, wow. Very eerie, extremely wiki, or quite spooky. And I'm going to go with very eerie.
I'm going to go with very eerie. Yeah. Kind of spooky, and if we were to think of, like, if this was, like, supernatural.
Yeah.
Responsibility, but mostly very eerie. It's just, ugh. How does a plane go missing? A big-ass plane, like a Boeing 777.
Yeah, like, I understand, like, well, we also have an episode on Amelia Earhart.
Coming soon, up, yeah.
Which is another plane situation. I understand something like that. If she had a smaller plane, their technology wasn't that up to date. But yeah. Like this was in 2014, a Boeing 777.
Post 9/11. Like, they would have had extreme security with everything. And that was the one thing about the whole hijacking, which I think it's also kind of important to point out. There were two Iranians passengers, and a lot of people, this is what I immediately with the speculation of hijacking, they focused on those two. And so they did a thorough investigation, and they were able to deter, because the two were on stolen passports. So that's what raised questions, where these two Iranian passengers had stolen passports. But after a thorough investigation, they're able to conclude that they were just seeking asylum, like, out of Iran. So, it's like, that's another, and like, that was another thing, like, those people got, yeah, the wow. Families of those people who are just like, wow, my son is being suspected of a terrorist, and it's like,
and they were just trying to escape.
Yeah.
Wow. Ugh, I can't even. That's so sad. I could not even imagine being in this situation.
Yeah. Because, like, 2014. Yeah, 2014 was high tension. That's another thing. It was high tensions politically, geographically. There was a lot going on with Iran and Syria and Pakistan and all that.
That, wait, before we even, I think I took off the page. I did, but it's the one here. There was a theory that this was, hold on, where is it? That this was some sort of, like, political,
scheme.
Yeah, or something like that. Let's see. Where I have, I found somewhere here. Okay. They think it's a political mystery. They said, let me open this article. Okay. Where is it? They think, okay, first they said that plane crashes are always political, which I'm like, okay, maybe. Like, okay. But they think that this one, that this one is, like, even murkier, like, with the whole political. They think that that the plane flew for hours after contact was lost, which we did think. They said that the information was attributed to the Obama administration officials who offered it to explain why American military assets might be deployed to a new body of water. The searchers hopped off from the Gulf of Thailand, crossing the breadth of Malaysian Peninsula to the Strait of Malacca and now to the Indian Ocean. Malaysian authorities had denied a similar report a few hours earlier, but then no one knows anymore what to make of the statements from what quarter. There have been so many contradictions that it's hard to pinpoint exactly when the Malaysians stopped talking sense. It is clear that they are not making the government of China very happy. So this came out in 2014 when everything, when it was happening. So this was, like, very high tension.
Yeah.
The Malaysian transport minister were openly disagreeing about the usefulness of satellite photos showing a piece of ocean garbage floating off the coast of Vietnam. It doesn't take terrorists shouting slogans to insert politics into an aviation disaster. That scenario had been ruled out in the case of Flight 370. Nothing has really, or hasn't been ruled out. It says, but every flight is in air, in the air is guided by regulations and administrative bodies, covenants, and international treaties on paths that reflect trade-offs in security and free movement. So this, like, was, like, a huge thing. I think that this flight, this crash, this disappearance caused, like, a lot of more attention.
Yeah.
To the
I don't blame, because it is suspicious.
Yeah. It definitely is. I guess I think that maybe that this was a political scheme to be able to have several different countries to be able to explore waters that they are not normally able to explore.
Yeah, sounds a little sus.
It does sound sus. This case, wow. I think this is a great start to our disappearances season. Season 2. Officially season 2.
And, you know, who knows what could happen within the next year or two. Maybe we'll have to revisit this case if new information is brought into light.
Yeah, it's been because 7 years. We're going to be talking about... when did the plane disappear?
2014.
But what, do you know the time and date?
March... What?
Where's Mama?
I don't know where Mom is. I don't know where she is.
March 8th. So I mean, hey, we're like a month off. We always do that. It's a little weird.
Coincidence.
We always do coincidences like that. But so we have a very long season 2 for you guys, like a very long. It's gonna last well into next year. Next episode, we're gonna be talking about Jacob Wetterling, which is a little intense. We wanted to kind of spread out, you know, because this one, you know, this one is intense because, you know, people did lose their lives that we know of, that we, you know, that we theorize. But it's a lot of, like, conspiracy. It's a lot of speculation. It's not really, like, sure. But there's some of them where, like, you know exactly what happened. Like, they disappeared, yeah. And then we know what happened, and then what happened, yeah, is not the best. So next episode, we're talking about Jacob Wetterling, which is pretty heavy and intense. I think will be pretty heavy and intense. And we tried to space them. We tried to space them out as much as possible to where, like, every other episode is, like, heavy and intense, and then, like, we have, you know, the kind of, like, more conspiracy theory or the one that have to deal with adults that we really don't know what's happened to them or things like that. After Jacob Wetterling, we'll be talking about Natalie Holloway, which is one of those.
Oh, God. That one hits close to home because I was living in Alabama the time that she went missing. And she, yeah, like, was not far from where I was.
Yeah.
I follow that case. Ooh.
Yeah, so, I mean, just for, like, context, like, Jacob Wetterling, we know, went missing in 1989, and his body wasn't discovered till 2016. So, yeah, there was still a lot of speculation from between those two times, like, what happened to him. So, we'll be talking about that next time. So, if you're a little bit more sensitive to those topics, we'll obviously give trigger warning in the beginning, but just trigger warning now. Also, yeah, just in case, because we don't, those topics can be pretty yeah, hard-hitting, pretty intense.
Yeah, and that's the, and, like, when we get into the details of the result of, like, what happened in that case, then, yeah, it's not good on the heart.
It's not, yeah, and it's definitely not. But if you do want something a little less heavy,
less and heavy, more less lighthearted, heavy,
we do have another podcast where we mainly talk about Twilight, but I actually want to start getting into, like, Marvel because I've been kind of obsessed with it recently. So we'll definitely be diving into some other things, but we've had some pretty good episodes this last couple episodes. So
now that you're watching WandaVision, we can do a episode diverging in that whole freaking show.
Yes. And I just want to say, if you've
She's made it, magical.
Yes, she is magical. If you, and we just talk about fantasy on that podcast. Like, we like to talk about, like, fantasy worlds, fandoms, things like that. So we talk about Twilight sometimes, but we dive into other things in the whole scheme of things. But I also want to say, I'm getting my second dose of my vaccine today, and I will be fully vaccinated.
Oh, yay!
So
good
if
luck.
You, I know. I heard that the second one is the one that is, like, the hard hitter.
Yeah.
And I heard it's not the day after, but it's the second day after when you get it that you, yeah, start getting kind of like, ugh. And I go back to work on Monday. Like, we go in person. And so I'm like, yikes. I am.
Yeah. My uncle got the second dose and he's currently, like, feeling it, like, the side effects from it. So my mom has to get it next Monday.
My brother-in-law and sister-in-law got the Johnson & Johnson, and I mean, it's only 75% effective, but something is better than nothing. But they said that when they got theirs that they felt like a rush in their body. And I was like, oh, yikes. I was like, I didn't get that one. I didn't feel like that when I got my first one at all. And then they were like, oh, but that everyone's saying that you get that rush with the second one. And I'm like, oh, so. But I'm not afraid of needles. I get B12 shots every week, yeah, in my butt. My mom gives them to me. So I'm pretty okay with
needles.
Needles.
I'm yeah, okay with, I am too. Yeah, so. I mean, I have a tattoo. I plan to get my next tattoo in May, so needles ain't a thing.
Yeah, I am a tattooed gal too, so we'll see. But yeah, that is it for this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. Tune in 2 weeks from now. 2 weeks. Yeah. Tune in on April 26th, where we will be have our second episode about Jacob Wetterling. And follow us on all of our social medias. You can go to our Instagram and find all of our other social medias from there. Our Instagram is at Extremely Wicked Podcast. And on there, I have a, like a, if you like our highlights, I have one that, and this is stream on ... And it has like all the lists of places that you can stream our podcast on, because we're not only on Spotify, we're on Anchor, Breaker, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Radio Public, Spotify, and we do the, we show the live version of our podcast on YouTube, and that way in the background you can see my sister cleaning and my cats. And with Rhi, you can see her One Direction posters.
And so. Yeah. And my alcoholic bottles on top of my bookshelf that I use for decoration. If you're 21, drink responsibly. If you're not, yes, don't do anything.
Yeah, so just so you guys are aware, if you want to go watch us on YouTube and just see everything, then go for it. But with that being said, we'll see you guys next time.
Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Bye.